Welcome to Bald Move Television, the officially unofficial place for all of television. I'm your host, Cecily.
And I'm your co-host, Alexis.
And we are today covering His Dark Materials, episode 4, called Armor. Armor?
Armor.
Spelled the British way, yes. Armor. All right, what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. This has been my favorite episode so far. I'm biased. I like animals. There are a lot of animals. Animals in this episode. Sorry, I lost my mind for a second there. And also Lin-Manuel Miranda.
It's
great.
I see we're having differing opinions here already.
But yeah, I liked it. What'd you think?
I liked it. We are officially actually heading north.
Hell
this
yes.
time. I think Lin-Manuel is certainly having a lot of fun with what he's doing. The bears are amazing.
Absolutely.
And full of so much feeling, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what the difference is between Yorick and Simba from The Lion King.
He's doing a lot of stuff with his... He doesn't really have eyebrows, but he's doing more with his eyes, I think, than
right.
those characters did.
Yeah, and I had to... I had to go to my local encyclopedia of knowledge, which is my husband, and say, are polar bears really that big? And I think it's actually very life size to what an actual polar bear is. And he's gigantic.
He's enormous. He is like eclipsing the doorway of that church toward the end of the episode.
Yes.
It was amazing.
But I still want to nuzzle his muzzle.
Yes. I want to wipe it down with a cleaning wipe or something, mm-hmm. and then I want to nuzzle it.
Yeah. Wipe all the little eye boogers out of his eyes and like give him a brushing, and I still want to cuddle with him, so.
Absolutely.
He's doing a lot. He's doing the most for me. Do you want to go ahead and talk about the episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Housekeeping.
Our annual holiday type shenanigans start next week. Be on the lookout for a little trailer we've cooked up. Pickle Me, this is our Rick and Morty podcast for season 4, and on this episode, Rick hates heist movies so much he spends an entire 30 minutes subverting the whole genre. Find out what Jim and I have to say on Pickle Me, this. Over on Bald Movies, in case you missed it, we saw A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood last week, the quasi-Mr. Rogers biopic that had us wondering if you could found a secular religion around the life of Fred Rogers. The answer is almost certainly, and that he would hate it. Pretty good argument against doing it, I guess. If you've enjoyed my occasional political tangents here on Bald Move, or maybe especially if you haven't, you might try listening to my new podcast on the Swizzbold Network, Three Right Turns. This week's episode is entitled Star Trek Republican, and I mean, that title doesn't intrigue you, I don't know. I also make jet noises with my mouth, so check that out. If any of these sound good, you can find that more information on baldmove.com to subscribe, or search for the show name wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
All right, we open with Lee Scoresby and his demon Hester in the air balloon chasing a lead on Yorick. And from that vantage point in the sky, they see the Egyptians arriving at Trollesund at the same time.
It's the most Lin-Manuel opening for anything ever.
All right.
I loved it.
He got his solo there in the beginning. So then we get down to the ground and see Lee Scoresby meeting the harbor master, is what I wrote here in the notes, but you are telling me Sisselman mm-hmm. is a title and not his actual name.
Yeah, yeah. So Sisselman is it's like a governor.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But this town's really small, so saying that you're the governor of a tiny town is like saying I'm king shit of Dookie Mountain.
Gotcha. Because it seemed to be, you know, I couldn't quite have put a pin on it. Maybe this is one of those Britishisms. But he had a office right there on the boat.
It's a dock thing, area.
Mm-hmm. And also the magisterium reported to him. But importantly, he's played by Dudders. Dudley Dursey from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering why I recognized him. At first, I thought it was just because he looks a little bit like Jared from Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
In the eyes and the nose zone.
Yeah, he's thinned out quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Since he's moved out with his parents, and he looks gaunt.
Yeah.
Hardly recognizable. Maybe the Death Eaters. Death Eaters? No. Oh my God, I'm a bad Harry Potter fan.
Is it not Death Eaters?
No, Death Eaters are Voldemort's followers. I'm talking about
that's what you're trying to say.
the guys you scare away with a Patronus charm. Everyone's shouting.
Dementors.
Dementors. Dementors got to him, so whatever. He wasn't that great to begin with. But we also see that Lee Scoresby is kind of a skilled pickpocket here. Steals his watch.
He's a handsome rascal.
Then we see Lord Fa and Fardacorum discussing taking Lyra to the Witch's Council and his previous relationship with Serafina Pecola.
We get to see Pan take a new form. It's an Arctic fox.
Yes!
He's very excited. They're always white, his forms, I noticed, except for one.
Yeah.
Two, the cat.
And they're just like a loaf. He's a fox loaf. He's kind of... Aaron was watching this with me, and he's like, is that just a fat dog walking beside her? I'm like, no, he's cuddly fox.
He's poofy.
He's poofy. He's supposed to stay warm in the cold.
Exactly.
So Fardacorum asks Lyra to show him exactly how she's reading the alethiometer as they walk through these very highly visible streets.
She just fucking whips it out in the middle of everything. Like, what are you doing?
Yep. And everyone's watching. Fardacorum notices people watching and tells her to put it away. They arrive at the Witch's Council and meet with a Dr. Lancelius.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've seen this guy before in something else.
He does look familiar.
So they are asking him to get a message to Serafina Pecola. And he reveals that stealing children is none of the witch's business. They know it's happening, but they have an agreement with the Magisterium to keep their nose out of it.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to stay neutral.
Mm-hmm. We also see in the scene that he too has a snake demon. That's which true. Is another second one we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
And tells them that he is aware that they are performing the Maestat process, or an intercision, as they call it.
How can one word pack so much like menace and sharpness? It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, intercision. Is this a word that was invented for the Golden Compass?
It can't be, right? That has to be something else.
I don't know. I thought it was, but it's certainly, yeah, you certainly know what it means. They also call them, intercision was created for his dark materials.
Interesting.
So don't look that up if you're curious.
Yeah. So Google that term. I guess it kind of makes sense. I mean, excision is to cut something off.
Yeah.
So what is intercision?
To cut yourself off.
Mildly interesting.
Mildly. So the other thing I wanted to mention here, and this is book knowledge, but I don't think it's spoiling anything, but the witches are all female, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have a man, specifically a male, on the ground to handle sort of their, you know, council affairs.
Right. He's their representative in this town.
Which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Did they always choose men to be the representatives on the ground because they can't have lose any witches in the field?
Maybe. Maybe they think people will look more kindly upon a man than a woman, possibly.
Certainly true. We need men to deal with men's business.
Mm-hmm.
Before they leave, Dr. Lansalius asks for Lyra to demonstrate using and reading the alethiometer, and she does so to find Serafina Pecola's pine spray.
When he asks her to do that, Farter Coram gives him a very significant look, mm-hmm. which we know from the book is this is part of something else. Maybe I'll mention that later on in the spoiler section.
Okay. So of course she finds it with the alethiometer because mm-hmm. we know that she can read this effectively.
Right.
And he gives her a little piece of Serafina Pecola's spray to use any time to summon her.
Yeah, we're getting set up for a future Hail Serafina moment.
Yeah.
Instead of Hail Mary. You see what I did there?
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Thank you.
Just do three northern pines and five pine oaks and Hail Serafina. Like counting a rosary.
Gotcha. Okay.
I bet it smells amazing down there in that cellar.
Absolutely.
I would love to have a room full. I'm so excited for Christmas. I'm just excited for Christmas and getting a tree in my house so it can smell like that too.
You could cheat like me and get those scent sticks and hang it in your fake tree.
Mm-hmm.
I like doing that.
So she, you know, demonstrates her power effectively, and before he leaves, he tips them off on to where they can find an armored bear for hire, possibly. Dun dun dun. Don't have to wait long. Because then they find Jorg Baroninson at the Metalworks.
Oh yeah, I wanted to say his very pronounced pronunciation, Jesus Christ, of Jorg Baroninson. Like, all right, this is the definitive. We know how to say this dude's name now.
Yes.
Jorg Baroninson.
Well, I'm still going to say Jorg Baroninson because I like that better.
It's got bear in it. Yeah.
So Jorg says he's seen the child cutters. He doesn't like it. And he's a bear of principle. But he can't do anything because he doesn't have his armor. And I love that he's ginormous. We already talked about how cute he is, but he gets in her face. And I don't know how she resisted as a 12-year-old girl the urge to reach out and just pet his soft face, because I was petting my TV.
the teeth,
yeah.
I had to guess
his breath probably isn't great. It's all whiskey and
I
fish.
Was thinking about his Ew. breath, because his where he is, there's like blood in the mud puddles and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Blood puddles,
probably the rotten meat breath. Gross.
So he refuses the call to adventure. In the next scene, we see Mrs. Coulter arriving at the Magisterium in another fabulous outfit.
Mm-hmm.
She meets with someone who, I didn't catch his name, but who cares? We don't see him again for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Magisterium members that sure like to look at her as she passes. And he says, well, you do have a reputation for stirring up trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And her monkey reaches for her hand at this point, maybe to comfort her, and she refuses that. She
slaps it away.
Leather monkey slap.
Yep. No comfort allowed.
Nope.
No hint that she is having any kind of emotions. Nothing.
None of that. So we go to a room where Father MacPhail is attempting to scold her for her actions. The cardinal arrives and offers her her sustenances.
Cardinal Kowtow. Yeah. It's Sturrock, but he's Cardinal Kowtow in my heart. I can't. That posture and the way he like is looking up through his eyebrows. It's the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's meant to be the worst.
I don't understand what he's doing. Because it's definitely not a spinal issue. The actor definitely doesn't have some kind of deformity in his spine, and I don't know what he's doing.
I don't know. It's like maybe it's supposed to be some kind of weird social engineering thing, but
he's like the prince from Robin Hood, the animated movie. You remember? Mm-hmm. That's just what he reminds me of. So the punishment they intend for her is to give the general oblation board to Father MacPhail, who looks just as surprised as she is.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I would too if I knew that that was happening. I don't want to be on her bad side, even if she's stripped of power.
Exactly.
They want to strip her of all of her official duties as well. Then she gives him a slow clap right to his face. and says that she has Azriel in bear prison and she's going to go back north. And she's going to get one alethiometer question. And she does. Just make her the cardinal already.
It seems like it'd be a lot easier. A lot more straightforward. And they're not happy about it. They're letting it happen, but they're not happy about it.
Yeah, no.
There could be repercussions in the
future.
For
whom? We don't know. So, back at the boat, Lyra asks about Farter Coram's relationship with Serafina Pecola. I love these first last name things. At least it's not three names like Benjamin de Reuter. That's done with.
Oh, R.I.P.
Farter Coram reveals that they had a child together a long time ago when he was a younger man, and that child died, and Serafina Pecola would not accept that, so she left him alone to mourn, and she wanted to fight the world and would go all the way to Yambe Aka to fight for her son's soul back.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Yambe Aka is the god of the death of witches.
Is this
specifically?
Is this a Golden Compass exclusive thing, or is this some old lore that I'm not familiar
with?
It
is that in the Golden Compass, and it's also based on a real thing. In our world, she is a Finnish goddess of death, and Ooh. She has charge of the underworld.
I fucking love it. I want to be a witch so bad. I want to fly with my pine sprigs and smell Christmas all the time and have death goddesses.
It was interesting to me. They decided to take away the visual of witches on brooms for this. Because as far as I know, those branches are meant to be kind of like brooms. Like they serve the same function as your traditional witch's broom.
Mm-hmm.
But here they're just a little piece of pine.
Yeah.
We saw in the preview for the next episode, if anybody else watched that, that they're just flying. They're just flying,
just
man.
Just flying around. Yeah, I guess I have some questions about the pine spray. Mm-hmm. Is this just a different tree?
It's a cloud pine, specifically.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're just all... So can witches pull a spray from the same tree? Just a different branch, or...?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And then just make it theirs somehow? Mm. Magic, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, magic. There's not that many sprays to give out, so must be something really special for Lyra to get one to use whenever she wants.
Yeah, a needle off of one.
So then we see Lee Scoresby arrives at the bar, and this is just a really bizarre scene. I'm not going to sugarcoat this one. This goes in, loudly picks a fight with all and everyone, and also asks about Yorick, and just has a whole... It's just a whole scene of him chewing the scenery. He's giving a stage performance for television, and it's just all an elaborate way to get his ass kicked and pickpocket a few of the locals. I see you have a different opinion.
I would agree with that. I agree that he is doing stage acting more so than... You know, the slightly more subtle, understated acting for film. I still thought it was really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I have some insight into his character. I know that he is just kind of an abrasive ding-dong, basically. And this is just his style. Like, he lacks subtlety, that character. So, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I also really enjoyed... I like the relationship that he has with Hester. It seems to be pretty close,
yeah.
Especially among adults. Like, we haven't seen a lot of adults speaking a lot to their demons.
Right.
But here
one
it's
of my
just
chief
like
complaints.
It's a constant dialogue, and it's great. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that he wiped the bar down before he put his hat on it. Like, yes, absolutely. You don't want somebody's...
No.
Stinky old whiskey on your head.
No, of course not. I mean, he looks amazing.
Oh my God, I love that outfit so much.
And he's got so much style, and all of his scenes with Lyra are so cute.
Oh, they're so good.
They're really good on each other. Especially, like, later we'll see the face he makes at her when Yorick growls. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just hate Lin-Manuel as Lee Scoresby. I do. I don't like it at all.
He does seem like he might be a little too young for the role. Just
maybe, you know, young, but also he's got this like Texas accent that comes and goes, and it's he just, I don't know. I feel like, how many musical scenes are we going to get of Lin-Manuel? I don't want to rail against it too much. I mean, that's all well and good, but it's just different. It's just very different.
It's very different. Yeah. If you come into this expecting your Sam, what's his face?
Sam Elliott.
Sam Rockwell. Sam Elliott. Sam Wise Gamgee. No, if you come into this expecting Sam Elliott, just don't do that to yourself. Be kind.
Yeah.
Expect Lin-Manuel Miranda being a little bit of a ham. Scamp. And a hammy scamp.
Ham scamp.
And that is what you'll get.
All right. So then we see Mrs. Coulter at the magisterium asking Fra Pavel, why did I go so extra with that? Asking her one question of the lathiometer, and that question is, who is Lyra Balakwa? And he says, surely you of all people. And she's like, just ask that question.
You know what I mean.
So I assume this is her learning about this prophecy that we as the audience already know about. We don't know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. This was me realizing, oh, maybe she doesn't know about it yet. And if she doesn't, maybe the magisterium doesn't either.
Right. Maybe just she wants an update on the prophecy.
Something. Yeah. Something. I don't know. I maybe was making some assumptions in the earlier episodes that I shouldn't have been. Oops.
Happens to the best of us. Lee Scoresby meets Lyra in the square. Like, he's just going around yelling about where the bear is, making his intentions entirely known, which I thought would be a problem at some point, but really isn't. And I'm just thinking of other questions like, how did he know to come here for Yorick? Wouldn't you just immediately go to the metalworks if that's what his thing is? Nope, don't think about it too much. So she says that she knows where the bear is, and she's not going to tell him until she trusts him. I like this scene.
I really like. So Lyra is the one speaking to him first, and he tries to pass on the authority to Farter Coram, and Farter Coram was just like, this is her. This is her show, man.
I love this.
He passes it right back to her. That's wonderful.
It's such a great subversion, because absolutely. Normally adults don't trust children and don't mm-hmm. listen to children. Lord Fa even tries to do it at some point. And like, not only is she a child who knows exactly what she's talking about, she has the science to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you couldn't call it science. Could you call it science? The alethiometer that everyone knows and trusts that she's can read. And Farter Coram just puts his faith in her. As a man who has loved a witch in the past, you can mm-hmm. tell that he's learned who to trust and believe women, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially the young ones. And her look of smug satisfaction when Farter Coram says that, I'm just following her lead. So good.
It's wonderful. And then she walks on the deal.
Yeah.
Oh, man, just like somebody walking off of a car lot. I love it.
Yep.
It's wonderful.
So good. But, you know, he doesn't, ends up not needing her until later. So we see Lord Fa and Farter Coram walking at night, and Serafina Pekala's demon arrives, and we learn that witches can send their distances, or their demons, great distances away.
Mm-hmm.
So Farter Coram recognizes Kaiza, the hawk.
Yeah, she's a white hawk.
White hawk.
I'm pretty sure. In the book, or not she, he. He is a white hawk. In the book, he is an enormous gray goose.
Goose, yeah.
Yeah.
I was really hoping for a goose.
I was too.
Because once again, I feel like it's a cop-out to have 75% of your characters have hawks as demons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a budget thing.
Yeah, and we barely got any Pan in this episode. And we got two snakes.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like, as co-stars and also main characters of the series, they should be in it more.
Oh my god, did you see on Twitter, Lin-Manuel's Twitter, he posted a short video of his son, Sebastian, meeting the puppet of Hester.
Oh my god.
And the puppeteer was like doing bunny stuff with it. It like kind of leaned up and quickly touched his nose to Sebastian's and like ran away.
That's so cute.
It was wonderful. And Sebastian was like covering his face like, oh my God. You know, like kids do. I loved it. It was great.
I love that.
You have to look at it.
I didn't even know that he had children, honestly. Child?
Just the one, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to find that and link in the show notes since since I know everyone wants to see it too.
There's that, and then he was showing a lot of behind the scenes stuff on his Twitter. I'm really glad I follow him.
Yeah.
But he showed it's not really a puppet so much as an enormous fucking statue of Yorick.
Aww.
And it's great, and it's
huge.
It's so big.
Huge. Huge man eaters. So cute.
Eat me.
Please. So Kaisa calls Farter Corum Corum Van Texel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I don't know if that's like a pet name. See what I did there? Demons aren't pets, Alexis. Stop it.
Excuse me. So this is where we realize that is his real name. And Farter is kind of a title. Okay. Because it sounds like father for a reason. You could see how Farter, father.
Okay. We have a little bit of feedback about that later, too, mm-hmm. I think.
Maybe I should have waited.
No.
Oops.
We'll get more into that later. I don't want to, like, spoil it for anyone that thinks that that's a spoiler. I don't even know if it is, but we'll talk about it in the feedback. Kaiser?
Soze. Go on.
Kaiser Soze of the Third Reich says that the children are 4 days north in Balvenger, and Balvenger means fields of evil in a language.
Mm-hmm.
Norse. What is it?
Norse. Bol is like bad or evil, and Venger is a plural for fields or meadow.
Mm.
Meadows.
Okay. Serafina Pekala will support them wherever they go.
Mm-hmm.
And as he leaves, you get the shot of Farter Corum with these tears in his eyes. Like, just, he either probably loved this woman so much and was just devastated that she lost, or that he lost his son, and I don't know if they do marriage or anything, wife, the mother of his child at the same mm-hmm. time. But just seeing her demon was enough to bring that back. And he is absolutely killing it in this role, James Cosmo.
He absolutely is, yeah.
He's doing so much. Then we see Lyra and Pan watching the Northern Lights, and they can glimpse the Hidden City with their naked eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means yet, but it's something that Asriel had to set up a complicated machine to be able to see.
Right.
And she can just see it. And I don't know if that's because she's a child or because she's a special child.
Or because she has started being able to read the alethiometer. That, and whatever caused that to start happening also has something to do with maybe it's all dust.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh.
Questions we need answers for.
Mm-hmm.
Tony finds Lyra and they have a little moment.
A little bonding moment, yep.
I don't know if this is his being aged down is coming to fruition and that they're going to have a young relationship or something like that. But
a love triangle.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe they're trying to remind us that Lyra is a girl that is old enough to start thinking about boys so that it makes more sense later on. I don't know.
Right, yeah. Maybe so you don't ship her and Roger, if we ever see Roger again. I don't know.
I don't know either. I kind of want to talk about the geography of this for a minute. I don't know why, but the first time and maybe the second time I was reading through the books, I thought that they say that this, you know, place is in the north, and I was thinking like some fucking abandoned middle of nowhere location, but I was looking at the map of quote-unquote Lyra's world, and it, if you lay that world and our world on top of each other, the geography lines up.
Mm-hmm.
So Trollesund is, they call it Lapland,
okay,
in the show. Yeah. So it's the southernmost port of Lapland, which is Finland in our world.
Okay.
So this Balvanger place is just the most northern part of Finland, which is technically Norway.
Okay.
That's not very far. No. It's not very far. No. We didn't go very far in this.
I figured that it had some sort of real life parallel,
mm-hmm.
because I think Yorick and maybe Iofer.
Iofer.
They have vaguely sort of like Nordic accents.
And they're from Svalbard, which is a real place here. Okay. It's called Svalbard here too. It's the northern archipelago. Archipelago. It's like a big island, kind of.
Yeah.
The northernmost archipelago of Norway.
Archipelago.
Archipelago. Archipelago. That's a cool name.
Archipelago. Okay.
Archipelago.
Archipelago.
Papadaboopy.
All right. We nailed it. So then in the next scene, we see Lee finding Yorick finally. And it's been 3 long years since they've seen each other. But Lee owes Yorick a debt. For some reason, he saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
And, but unfortunately, Yorick is drunk and asks Lee to leave because I think he's just embarrassed to be seen without his armor. And in his drunken state and to be brought down so low. And Lee wants to help and he's going to.
Yeah, Yorick is kind of too down on himself at this point to be willing to accept help.
Yeah, I like this scene. I'm really curious about the backstory of Lee and Yorick and how they got to be buddies. And I'm sure they have some really fun adventures they go on. Didn't you? You gave me a book.
Yeah.
Is this about their first meeting adventure?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what that was.
I haven't read that yet, but...
Yeah, we find out in that book. It's not too much of a spoiler. Lee won his balloon in a card game.
Okay. Because
of course he did. And Yorick, they kind of helped bail each other out of a town where shit went sour. Very similar to this, actually.
Yeah, I could see how. Lee comes hard.
It's, oh, yes. Oh, yes, he does. And he's always been like that.
Seems like, I don't know. Seems like you get a lot done just kind of, you know, being a little bit more subtle about it. But you just walk in and announce your intentions. I mean, there's something very honorable and admirable about that honesty.
Yeah, as a straightforward con man.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I guess it is now.
Like, hey, if you're going to get within 2 inches of someone's face, then you're asking for your watch to be snatched, right?
It's true. Yeah.
You're going to punch a guy and you lose your watch? That seems fair.
Wallet or two, you know.
So Lee goes to the Sisselman on Yorick's behalf and says, and I assume he made this up, but says he's got a bill where he officially won Yorick's armor, and they try to cite law back and forth to each other. Before he eventually tries to bribe him,
mm-hmm.
and intimate that he, you know, can just change his mind with enough money. But this is a Sisselman who's very serious about his duties.
Well, he's implying that the Magisterium already bribed him to do this in the first place.
Oh,
so
really?
He's like, yeah, so he's like, well, if you already accept bribes, clearly, so here, take my bribe. And the dude was like affronted.
Oh.
Hypocrite. And then he pulls out a gun on him. So,
all right.
Cool.
I assumed that he was just cowed by the power of the Magisterium, but it's, I guess it's
both.
Same.
Yeah.
So yeah, so under threat of gun, he leaves.
Accurate.
Then we quickly see Mrs. Coulter practicing her pitch to Eofor. Eofor? Jesus, come on.
Eofor.
Eofor. Fur, it's right there in the name. And I think her monkey comes very close to speaking, and she shushes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he was going to say something along the lines of, you've got this or something. And she's like, bitch, I already know. I got this. Step off.
Or she's going to give her some advice like, oh, have you thought about what to offer him for this instance and this instance?
Mm-hmm.
She's got it. She's perfectly prepared.
Yep. No dialogue allowed whatsoever.
So back at the dock, the Egyptians are preparing to leave. And they already know that Lord Asriel is being held by the bears, and they know about Bolvanger, so they're going to go ahead and go. Lord Foss says that Yorick is a savage and he talked to someone, probably the Sisselman or some other magisterium asshole. And she pulls out the alethiometer to fact check his ass immediately.
Again, in the middle of the docks. Cool.
Yeah. She knows that Yorick was tricked, but Lord Fa doesn't care, and he insists they leave anyway. Again, why is anyone doubting her? She's the prophesied child. If you don't have her on board, then what are you even doing this for? I know you're trying to find your kids, but you really need her.
Oh, yeah.
And okay, so throughout the episode, I'm wondering at what point were they going to find the armor? Because I knew going into it that was going to be what happens.
Right.
And that's the reason he was being held there. But it just felt like, I don't know. I kept trying to like check myself during this scene. Like, what do people who don't know what's happening know? He doesn't have armor. They have to find it. Is that why he's being held there? Why would he be serving these people? I don't know. It seems like Lord Fa just wants to add some extra stakes here.
Wants to get the hell out of Dodge because he knows that Mrs. Coulter is on their trail now. I kind of liked there was a little bit of conflict between Lyra and Lord Fa here because I don't know. Does it seem more realistic? We're talking about a world where there are witches and armored bears. Does that even matter? To say that something is realistic or not. Like, if she were just getting everybody to blindly agree to her, like she does in the books a lot of the time.
Right, you can't just... Yeah, it's tough because you can't just trust in... Well, I'm still going to call it science here. You can't just trust in these facts immediately. You need to know that you have good instincts as well, that you're making good decisions. Even with all of that information, even if Yorick was tricked and everything, then what's... the best thing for Lord Fa to do for his people.
Exactly, yeah. He has a lot resting on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And leaders sometimes have to make difficult decisions, even though they may not seem like the most correct thing to do.
Right.
In the moment.
And, you know, she's so new at doing this that maybe she knows the truth, but maybe she doesn't have the exact details right or something like that. Or maybe it's still not even the best thing to do, even if she's right. And he was right about going north to London, and he had to convince everyone to come along with him then. So, yeah, I get it. But she, you know, she's also a 12-year-old girl, and nobody can double-check the alethiometer to make sure she read it right.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
She could, and she's also known for telling stories. So she could just say, the alethiometer told me, and she's lying, because that's how she's playing this bluff.
she bluffs a few times in this episode, so it is not entirely unlikely.
Right. So then we see back at the Magisterium, rather, Boreal accosts Fra Pavel in the hall and wants to know what Mrs. Coulter knows. He calls him ratty a few times in the scene, and threatens to expose his filthy predilections. Which, I don't know, is he gay? I assume he's gay or something. Or maybe he's fucking kids, but also, like, why would you hide that for him?
Well, according to the church, every gay man is a pedophile.
Well,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just faith versus science, I guess.
I don't know where ratty comes from. I don't have any greater insight into that.
So, yeah, he wants to know what Mrs. Coulter knew from the alethiometer, and then wants to know what Grumman discovered, but then changes his mind to reframe the question and how Grumman discovered what he did. Because right now I'm thinking that nobody knows he's traveling between worlds. So if he asked Fra Pavel to find what he discovered, then surely all of that would be revealed to Fra Pavel and the Magisterium at the same time. Sophie asks how he can trace him back that way.
Yeah, he asks how can he find what Grumman discovered. So he, instead of just asking straight what it is and not having any context for it, because the alethiometer is not, and especially the way that these old dudes with books read it, it's not very intuitive. You get like a surface level of an answer to your question, but nothing deeper.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to ask a much more specific question, which is, what is my path to get to there? Which I think was a smart move.
Yeah. He says to report back with whatever he finds.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just stay for the reading like Mrs. Coulter did?
Because it takes weeks.
Really?
Yeah. When these dudes do it, it takes weeks. When adults specifically do it, it takes a long time.
Oh.
I think they mentioned that. When Mrs. Coulter was first asking questions back in that earlier scene, they said it can take up to X number of weeks to get an answer.
Gotcha. There was a scene of them standing over the alethiometer, or I thought it was, and it seemed like she was asking him to ask right then, and she was watching. That's what confused me.
They have to go through the books and like write down all the meanings and then cross-reference because, yeah, they can... From what I understand of what I've read, they can get in the correct mind state to ask the question, to pick the right symbols, ask the question, and then get symbols back. But from there, they have to flip through, you know, the 20 books of alethiometer stuff that they have and actually research it. Where, as we've seen with Lyra, it's intuitive. She just knows.
Gotcha.
She's riding up and down that ladder.
Yeah. Lyra decides to find Lee to help find Yorick, or help convince Yorick to come with them. So while she's attempting to hire him, she steals all of his bacon.
Yes.
And, you know, she comes to the conclusion that they have his armor, and Lee shares to with her and us that the armor is like a bear, an armored bear's demon. So it's very important. You can't just go off and get some other armor. You can't just leave it here in the town.
Right.
Especially since, well, yeah, we see that he has forged this armor himself out of sky iron. And it's a new armor that he made after he was cast out from the bears proper. Whatever you call a gathering of bears.
I don't know.
Tribe? Clan?
Clan sounds good.
Yeah. Bear Clan.
Bear Clan.
In the scene, we also get my favorite line from the books, and it was also in the movie, and we got it here again. I'm so glad. But war is the sea he swims in and the air he breathes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the bear himself is not saying it this time, but we still got the line.
Yeah.
Loved it. It's good.
I don't know why I like it so much.
It's very poetic.
Then we see Lyra going to Yorick Baroninson in exchange for him joining their motley crew of ragtag Egyptians. She will tell him where to find his armor, and he also must agree not to kill anyone unless they pose an actual threat to his life or they attack him.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a fair trade.
Yeah, so she looks it up immediately, and Yorick runs off to the center of the oratory. And he's breaking everything along the way, almost including Lyra.
He's just going in a straight line, man. The shortest, what is it, path between two points is a straight line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he's going. Just through things like a...
Just leaving a bear-shaped hole through the town.
So the Magisterium goons and Sisselman try to shoot him down, but that's a stupid thing for them to do.
Yeah. Bullets are just bouncing off of that armor.
Yeah, as they're desperately trying to stuff gunpowder into their guns and reload their single-shot pistols, Yorick almost crushes Dudley's head before Lyra steps in. And she's like, no, just walk away with me. And also Lee shows up and helps, I guess. That's when he makes that cute face at her. And, they agree to leave together while Kaiza, Seraphina Pecola's witch, not witch, her demon, watches over them.
Mm-hmm. I want to hope that we get more scenes with Lee and Lyra, but I know that we won't really. Not like this.
Mm-hmm.
Not scenes like this. That's kind of a shame.
Yeah.
Because it's so good. It's two bluffers playing off of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know. The show could remix everything and we just got all Lee and Lyra scenes. Replace all the Lee, all the Yorick stuff with Lee stuff.
Hmm. They did. They've already remixed a lot of stuff in this episode. Like, we end up in the same place, mm-hmm. so it doesn't really matter that much. But they have changed some things for efficiency here.
Lyra surprises Lord Fa with Yorick as well as Lee. And you can see that Lee is really charmed by how well Lyra can bluff. And he makes his pitch to Lord Fa for his services. So I'm kind of surprised that the Egyptians are paying for any kind of help. But having an aeronaut seems like pretty decent thing to pay for.
It's also easy to say that you'll pay for something because you never know who's gonna die in this crazy mission that they're doing.
Right, exactly. I'm willing to bet that he doesn't get paid at all by the end of this.
If he survives, maybe he will.
Right.
If all of them survive.
So then we see Mrs. Coulter in another fucking fabulous snow outfit. Like,
in the hat, yeah.
I'm really anti all impractical snowshoe wear,
mm-hmm.
but it's worth it for what she's doing here.
Yeah, it's her cave walking clothes.
Mm-hmm. She goes to Eofor Ragnarsson's King Bear Cave to ask for control over Asriel.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange, she's going to offer a baptism and acceptance into the Magisterium. That really makes him perk up. And this is so heartbreakingly cute, what Eofor is doing. Like, it just being manipulated by her. You know, first he starts off, you know, with his walls up. He's not even going to look at her because mm-hmm. he doesn't want to be manipulated by her again. And once she offers him this, the acceptance into the Magisterium, he peeks his head around the corner and he's wearing this badass.
That helmet is so cool.
But fucking gaudy armor.
Yes.
It's so extra. I love it.
It's so different from Yorick's.
Yeah. And he would be the first and only bear to be baptized.
And the fact that he even wants this is giving us some major insight into that character.
Right. Because, you know, he's living in a cave and he's doing bear stuff. Mm-hmm. And they've, I mean, you know, we see that within this episode through, you know, Miss Coulter practicing her speech that she's giving him here. You know, she helped to displace Yorick and give Eofor control over this throne.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants some, he has humanish aspirations, but I don't know.
It seems to be the way that they're leading us to think. Yeah.
He's just got this, like, he's got this kind of slack jaw thing underneath his helmet. Like, maybe he's been in some serious battles before and it's just... Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I guess I just have a tender spot for people who are clearly being taken advantage being of and just go in like heart open.
Right. And I should say, even the fact that he is able to be manipulated in bear culture, it means that he's losing his bearness.
Because bears can't be tricked.
Mm-hmm. Is that a spoiler? Because they haven't said it yet in the show, but soon we will find out that bears cannot be tricked. Apparently, so they say. But I guess,
who knows?
Yeah, if I were part of a race of sentient fox people, I would say all foxes can't be tricked. So, you know.
Well, we know that us as women can't be tricked. So that's all I'm sure of.
I wish that weren't true. Wah, wah.
So the end of this deal will be that he keeps Asriel locked in bear prison, and also destroys all of Asriel's labs, and Mrs. Coulter gets to control him in bear prison.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds kind of hot.
Potentially, yeah.
Now we see how feisty Lyra was made. These kind of situations that they put themselves in.
Mm-hmm.
So then we go back to the Egyptians and Yorick and Lee and Hester, and everyone's setting off on foot to their journey across the frozen tundra, and they're heading
north. We're going north
again.
Hell yes, love it. So happy.
Yeah.
I don't know where. I want to know where the sleds are, and the sled dogs.
Yep.
Because they were supposed to be there. Maybe it's just because of going uphill. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Maybe they're just going back to the ship to get supplies. They aren't actually taking off yet.
Journey north. 4 days. They're going to have to walk without any dogs, unless they find some along the way.
And train them how to be sled dogs.
Yep. Find some other bears. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Anything's possible.
So that's the end of the episode. I do have a little bit of feedback if you'd like to hear what everyone's saying.
I would like to hear it, yes. I don't have access to these emails. Tell me all the things.
Good. It'll be a nice surprise for you.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club. But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time. For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
So a couple of these came in before this week's episode, but I think they're still relevant here. Beth says, something Alexa said a couple of weeks ago is haunting me.
Oh. What did I do?
I really agree that they are taking their sweet, sweet time getting to the north, which makes me worried about rushing later, especially because they're putting more content in than was in the book. I do remember that the book builds in much the same way, so the reader is about as impatient as Lyra to get there, but I would have thought that they might cut things to keep the pace moving. Having said that, I love the remixing of when we're introduced to the other worlds. Introductions to certain other characters will make a lot more sense now that we've seen the buildup. I keep internally screaming when we're in our world in anticipation of seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
On the point about how they could show better the connection between humans and demons, I had a similar thought when the journalist was killed. One of the big things in Lyra's world is how incredibly taboo it is to touch another person's demon without very express permission to do so, which totally makes sense, but with the way she was killed, we didn't get any sense of that. She looked surprised when he grabbed it, but not horrified. It was actually a really horrific death because of the violation before she was killed. This theme will also be important in later episodes, I suspect, so it's a shame they didn't set it up here. It's also part of why Miss Coulter sends her monkey after Pan rather than doing anything herself to him. Only part is it's also because she pulls all of her shitty behavior on the monkey to other it from her. Demons often fight it out to see which of the humans are in charge, but a human would never interfere in that. Anyway, it's little details like that which would really help build the world. But I also couldn't agree more that just some more demon screen time would be better screen time. Also, still can't imagine how much the CGI budget is. If this were Game of Thrones, we'd probably only see Pan once every 3 episodes. Yes, I'm still bitter about Ghost. Thanks for asking.
We all are.
Yeah.
Right there with you.
I agree. I mean, the thing about Ghost is that Ghost could just, you know, story moves forward without Ghost being there.
Mm-hmm.
These demons are really important, especially when like a witch's demon is being sent out as a representative of her, and you know, he's got to be able to hold that on his own. No Grey Goose can do that.
Nope. I guess can't emote as much as a hawk. The hawk's not really emoting though, so I don't know. They just didn't want to.
Didn't look as graceful bowing.
A new model. Probably look goofy as fuck, and they decided, well, this can't be a witch's demon. Look how goofy it is. It's got this muscle neck and this beefy chest thing.
Yeah.
I see you making marks.
I don't know. I was really disappointed that it wasn't a goose because I was so excited to see this Grey Goose. But those are my own expectations here.
I mean, it's reasonable expectations. It's a very minor thing to change.
I just keep thinking of Farter Quorum saying, I'm really surprised that Tony's demon chose the form of a hawk. Really? We're not. nobody else is.
Literally every Egyptian that we've seen has a hawk. His mother has a hawk. What the fuck are you talking about?
Jasmine writes in, Ruth Wilson is killing it, but ever since I first saw her in Luther, something about her face threw me off. Then I realized it's her mouth. It's too big and curls up like a cartoon when she smiles. It makes her look like Dr. Finkelstein from The Nightmare Before Christmas, and it freaks me out. Okay, I had this exact same thought. I don't know if anyone out there listening who also listens to our American Horror Story podcast, but I do have this, I don't know, has a good way to say this without sounding like an asshole. I notice these things. Mm-hmm. Like Sarah Paulson's very moist upper lip. So I immediately noticed this on Ruth Wilson, but I wasn't willing to say it because I'm trying to keep this positive. Mm-hmm. No matter how much Lin-Manuel Miranda tries to take that away from me. And I don't know, it doesn't make her any less attractive or anything like that. It's just once you see it, it cannot be unseen. So thanks for ruining that for us, Jasmine. Second part. Do you think this series is being a bit overdramatic while taking too many episodes to lay out the story? I read all the books as a kid and I love them, so I know the general story arc, but I've been trying to gauge how good the show is by my fiance's reaction as a non-book reader, and he seems ambivalent and not that excited so far. The scene in episode 3 of Lyra giving a rousing speech to the Egyptians and then raptly listening to this random little girl tell them they need to risk their lives and livelihoods to go north seems a little ridiculous, but maybe I'm overthinking this.
I mean, these are all fair points. I can't argue with them.
Yeah, I get that they are... This does seem a little bit far-fetched, but you also have to keep in mind, and they did lay this out in the show, is that the Egyptians are all pretty well aware that she's this prophesied child. So even if she weren't compelling, which I think she is, I think they know that that's the right choice. And there are people like Lord Fa and Raymond Van Garrett who will always push back against what's rational or just what's assumed. These people want to still have control over their lives. So they're that voice of the audience saying, why are we doing this? Let's think about it.
Right. Especially, well, pertaining to that scene, it could also be an ego thing. Because you have this very small girl saying, we should fight. And if you say, no, we shouldn't fight, that makes you look a little bit like a coward.
Right.
So that could be some motivation there too. But I do almost feel like the scene where Lord Fa is telling her, no, we're going, forget the bear, let's just go, is almost like an apology for that previous scene and how vaguely unrealistic it is.
Right. Yeah, and it doesn't become real until it may be 27 kids, but that, you know, that's just an abstract number. It's not my kid. It's not my life that's being affected. So, yeah, I get that. Next email is from Jared. Jared has a quick question on the books versus the TV show. Jared is not familiar with the books at all and just the TV show. So how true is the TV show keeping with the book? Also, are the books already finished or is it still ongoing? I see they've already been renewed for season 2 and I don't want to get into a GRRM Game of Thrones situation. Are you able to speak to that without spoiling too much? It's the end of the feedback, so if you're still listening, be prepared to know how much of the story we get into, I guess.
I can talk about it without being too spoiler. I will say they have changed the way that information is being given to us in some ways, but as far as the main points of the plot, it's following the books pretty closely, I would say. We're just getting more insight into what is happening outside of Lyra's perspective.
Did you say that they are cutting some of the second book, like the other Our Worldness, into this season 2?
They are, and it's not, they aren't like changing the when of when things take place. All they're showing is the lead up to things that happen in the second book, but from the perspective of these characters that are introduced in the second book, or, you know, their actions that are introduced in the second book. They're showing the lead up to that here in this. They're cutting that in, which makes sense. It's, you know, linear storytelling, and it's preparing us for the frankly quite weird shit that happens That happens at the end of this particular adventure of Lyra's going north.
Ah, yeah. Jared also asked, are the books already finished or are they still ongoing?
You have nothing to fear on that point. The original trilogy is finished, which is what the show is following. And the second trilogy is almost finished. There's one more book coming out, and I'm pretty sure that's coming out pretty soon, within the next couple of years. Pullman is pretty good at sticking to deadlines.
That's good. Yeah, and he did the right thing. He finished the original trilogy or the original series and then started adding the supplementary material, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You're the expert here.
It is supplementary. It's the beginning of the story and also the end of the story.
Mm-hmm. You think, I'm asking you for speculation now. Do you think that's going to be it? Or you think maybe there could be more other stories, like, I don't know, whatever main characters we end up with, their children in the future, you think they'll do anything like that?
I don't know, because almost everything that we're shown is from Lyra's perspective.
Okay.
There is a secondary character whose perspective is introduced in the new trilogy, but I don't know if there's any future in that. I don't know how many answers are going to be given by the end of the new trilogy. The second book ended in a weird place. Hmm. I'm really interested to read the third one. But it's answers. It's all about answering these questions that we have. Dust and its role in everything and the relationship of humans and their demons.
Mm-hmm.
All that good shit.
That's good. Final email this week is from Tabinginsaw. As someone who is completely new to the story, I was hoping you might be able to shed some light on some of the character names. There's a lot of world building involved with a story like this, but it makes it hard to keep track of who's who. For example, I kept hearing Father Corum rather than Farter Corum. Is Farter his first name or some kind of title? So you said that Father and Farter are kind of the same thing?
Yeah.
Is that relevant how they got to Farter? Because he's a father that farts a lot.
Cecily. How could you? No, I think it's just a sort of vaguely cognization.
Okay.
Welshization of father.
Ah.
If you say father with a slightly Welsh accent, it ends up sounding a little bit like farter. So.
Okay.
There you go.
And then you just start spelling it that way and everyone does it.
And that is kind of the role that he serves in the Egyptians, is sort of a spiritual, I don't want to say spiritual guide because that gives the wrong connotation, but like a spiritual advisor.
Right. Like a god farter.
The fartest. How far are we going to take this?
The fartest. Take it as far as I can go.
I just aged 4 years. I hope you're happy.
I am. I really
am. Oh, God. There's like 6 more gray hairs.
Tabinginsaw says, similarly, I wonder how one becomes a lord in this world and what it means. There's a Lord Fa who appears to be Egyptian, if I'm not mistaken, and there's a Lord Asriel and a Lord Boreal, and none of these people are in league, so I'm curious why they have the same titles.
They all have power, so they can call themselves lord.
They all have magical powers.
Power either through money or just other people's regard for them. Lord Boreal has money, obviously.
Obviously.
The way he dresses and everything, you can tell.
In his Tesla.
In his Tesla, yeah. He has power in that way. Lord Asriel has power in the sense that, I mean, look at him. All the things that we know about him. We know that he does these crazy expeditions. We know that he bangs any woman he wants, basically, which is... Okay. And yeah, so, you know, you can call himself Lord if he wants to.
All right.
And Lord Fa is the only one that is, like, maybe actually a lord.
Right, as the Western king.
Where he has
king.
People under him, yeah.
So yeah, that's all we've got this week, Lord Alexis.
Don't like it.
So we are going to talk about spoilers that are regarding any and everything, but mostly just this season kind of spoiler knowledge. So if you don't want to know something, it will definitely be spoiled for you. You can tune out now and we'll see you next week.
Okay. The one insight I have, and there could be questions why a priest was holding a bear's armor, specifically a priest.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, Lyra reads the alethiometer, and in her reading of the alethiometer of where the armor was, it gives her additional insight that the priest was testing it for spirits.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which never has anything to do with anything else ever again.
Oh, really?
Kind of a throwaway line. I can understand why they didn't include it here.
Huh.
It's just...
Just because the magisterium just doesn't understand the power or the connection between, you know, your soul and this thing.
Mm-hmm. They're mad curious about it.
They are testing the relationship between demons and people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some kind of foreign concept that all they can do is throw their own magic at it.
Yeah. Also, like, what are demons composed of? Is that matter the same as the matter in other things that are also very important?
Mm.
Who knows? They want to know.
They certainly do.
It's called experimental theology, which is physics in our world. I think they'll go into that a little bit more.
Hmm.
Well, in the second book, but I don't know when it's going to come in the show. Maybe two episodes from now.
If at all. Yeah.
If at all. Yeah.
That's all we've got this week. Until next week's episode, I'm your host, Cecily.
I am three polar bears in a trench coat, Alexis.
Bye.
Bye.
What happened?
Got it in your own head.
Really hard not to do.
Drink some water real quick. No, it's just for you. Just for you later. Perfect.